This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, Australia. Welcome to My Millennial Money. I'm Glenn James. Today on this episode, we're talking with a community member, podcast listener, all-around pest in the Facebook group. His name's Neil Benson. He's from Queensland in Brisbane. Neil, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Glenn. It's an honour and a pleasure to be here.
Now, for those in the Facebook group, you might remember Neil from not so much his name, but from his profile image. It's a little Lego man. So if you've ever seen a little Lego man comment, well, this is the culprit right here.
There's a story behind that. We'll get into that later on,
perhaps. We'll get into that. So we're just going to have a bit of a chat about how Neil invests, how he sees the world with his money. We'll see if we can get into some trouble along the way. So you ready to have a chat, Neil?
Absolutely. Bring it on, Glenn.
Okay, so Neil, you are a Brisvagusian and you came to the Brisbane show and I got to meet you there. So thanks for coming along and supporting us there. Can you just tell us maybe just a little bit about your history? You know, it's not a native accent that you've got. So when did you end up on the island?
Sure. So I'm Neil. I'm originally from Northern Ireland. I left there when I was 18, went to Edinburgh. Was working there when I met a Brisbane girl called Natasha, and that's how I ended up in Brisbane. But I arrived here 6 years ago after 12 years in London and 3 years in Los Angeles, and my accent is pretty stuffed up. There's Northern Irish, Scottish, a little bit of London, mate, some Californian, and I've just got my Australian citizenship, so who knows, I'll be speaking like a bogan any day now.
Love it. Well, congratulations on formalising your union to country, I guess. Yeah. So you're not a millennial.
Post-millennial, wannabe millennial.
Yep. Millennial. However, I like to get every person of every age, slice of life and all that on the show because we can all learn from each other. What's the family sitch? You got Spawn?
Yes, and Natasha and I have been married for 15 years. We've got three little kids, Jensen who's 9, Zana who's 6 and Mia who's 4. And so, yeah, three little ones running around as well.
Wow, amazing. So, Gen X, Neil from Brisbane, when did you start getting interested in money and why did you want to join the, you know, money groups? Because I think I threw it out in another group that we were in. I saw you commenting on stuff and I'm like, oh, hey, Neil, come and have a chat on My Millennial Money. So, what caused the interest in personal finance and investing for you?
So, I've always been trying to save for my future and trying to think about retirement. But I was driving back from San Francisco to Los Angeles when I was living in California. My wife had stayed on a few extra days with her parents. I had to get back to work. And I was in the Central Valley of California, driving down there, listening to the radio, whatever's on AM in the middle of nowhere. And this guy called Dave Ramsey came on the show or on the radio. And for those of you who don't know him, he's a pretty widely known American author, podcaster, radio host. He's been going for years. And so he started talking about getting out of debt and saving for your future and had people on his show telling really interesting stories. So I got into it then and started listening to more of Dave Ramsey's work. And then I remember when I moved to Australia, I was living in London for a couple of months, moved to Australia and went, who is the Australian Dave Ramsey? And Glenn, your name didn't come up, but this other wannabe called Scott Pape, his name came up. And so I started following Barefoot Investor and got into his stuff whenever I landed here. And that was really useful because when you're just new in Australia, I don't know what superannuation is. I didn't know what the ATO stood for, how important that would become in my life. So you had to learn all those kind of things pretty quickly. Health insurance. There's a whole lot of little complexities about living in Australia that you just don't find in other countries. So I had to learn it pretty quick.
And what took you to the US and Australia other than Natasha? But like, what's your career and what do you do?
So I'm a nerd by profession. I'm an IT guy. I help Microsoft customers and partners build business applications on the Microsoft platforms. And so I got a chance to work in America because one of the great things about IT is your skills are really transferable. You know, I've got friends who are doctors or nurses or teachers, and you have to kind of retrain or recertify if you want to move a country. IT, dead easy. You know, you've got a technical certification or experience that easily translates to other countries. So it makes you very mobile. So we got an opportunity to work in the US, and the guy there said, we've got 12 offices, pick whatever one you want. So we landed in Los Angeles and had 3 great years there. And it was halfway between London and Brisbane. So that's why we landed there.
Just for my own indulgence, do you build like the equivalent of like AWS stuff for people?
So the equivalent to AWS is Microsoft Azure, and we use some Azure services. The core product I build on is called Dynamics, Microsoft Dynamics 365. So think about sales, marketing, customer service databases. So if you ring up an insurance company or a bank or, you know, your breakdown service, and somebody needs to help you out with a customer service case, that could be our software that you're using or they're using to serve you.
So you're self-employed.
Yeah, I've got two businesses at the moment. So yeah, definitely self-employed right now.
Yeah, awesome. How many staff do you employ?
In one business, there's two. So my wife and I, and there's one technical consultant in one of the businesses. And then the new one, there's 6 co-founders. So we're all equal. It's a unit trust. So we're all equal trust holders, unit holders, whatever it's called.
Unit holders,
And yeah, that's really exciting. So that's the startup just getting going, and we'll see where that one goes. But it's looking good.
Awesome. So let's dive in and have a look under the hood of your own personal situation. You landed in Australia. Obviously, you would have had to rent somewhere to start with.
We were really lucky. We stayed with Natasha's mum and dad for 10 months.
Yeah.
It wasn't my idea, but I'm very grateful to them. But 10 months is a long time to stay with your in-laws. But eventually, we found a house nearby. So we're just 500 meters around the corner. And yeah, we bought that about 6 years ago. And so we're just about to start some renovations. But that was, you know, I guess everybody looking for a house now is having a lot of challenges trying to get into the market. I felt the same way 5 or 6 years ago, and it was tough, and it's not getting any easier. I don't know if it's going to get any easier in the future.
Yeah, I'd appreciate your thoughts on this. Like, you're a pretty well-traveled and international type person. Now that, you know, as at today, we're recording this on the 27th of October, but as at today, Australia have announced that as of next week, anyone can leave if they're fully vaxxed. I was thinking the other day, I think we will see some pressure taken off the home market and the housing market. I don't think it's going to collapse or anything like that. I just think it will probably stabilize and chill out just a little bit, because now that more of us can travel, we're going to obviously spend more money on traveling and doing all that, which means there's less money here to spend on stuff like homes.
Yep.
Like, what's your view on that, just from a guy in Brisbane as I'm a guy in Blue Bay?
It's really strange. When the pandemic hit, you know, we saw this dip in the market, in the stock market at least. I thought the housing market would come under real stress, but things have taken off. I would love to do some renovations here at home. You cannot find a tradie or a building contractor for love nor money. The price of timber has gone up by 30 or 40%. So the other thing we thought of doing was to buy a new car. And you can't get a new car. We're on a 9 or 10 month waiting list for a new car. So microchips and timber, who knew? It's just bizarre, the things that are in short supply.
What car did you order?
Oh, a family bus, a Kia Carnival 8-seater.
Toot toot, move over.
Yeah, I used to have a membership of a sports car club, so I had a lot of race cars, and yeah, times have changed. 3 little kids.
Yeah. So 6, 9, and 4, that's a bit of a good age, because, you know, they can feed themselves and, you know, walk around themselves and all that now.
Yep.
How are you positioning money with teaching those kids, your kids?
I think I'm trying to do it at least similar to how my parents taught me, which is you get money for doing jobs around the house. So Jensen's 9. He's been cutting the grass for a couple of years. He gets $10. So $5 for doing the back, $5 for doing the front. He sometimes gives up halfway through, but he doesn't get paid the $10 unless he does all of it. The girls, they also get money for doing chores. And so they've got to help out and do a job. And then we have some jars, and they split their money between splurge. So this is, you know, Scott Pape's Barefoot Families, the splurge jar for spending on sweets and at the ECA and that kind of stuff. And then a save jar so they can think about what they want to save up for. And then a give jar so they can give money away to a charity or something through school normally.
Yeah. And how is that going? Are you seeing the different personalities come out of that, like spender or saver with the kids?
Yeah, for sure. Zana, our middle daughter, she's a spender. She will spend her save money on candy at the first opportunity. Mia's a little bit younger. She doesn't have three jars. She's just got one piggy bank. And Jensen's really good. He can knuckle down, and he bought a hoverboard, cost $350. He sold his skateboard, which he'd bought with his spend money before, to fund that. So he's pretty good. He's got a bit more focus on a long-term savings goal, but he's a bit older as well. So
yeah, awesome. So with your own financial situation, and I'm just letting everyone know, like I just jumped on with Neil and I said, we'll just have a chat. I haven't even planned anything for this episode. So we're just going to see where the road takes us. So you've got your house that you live in. How have you structured your mortgage?
Really pretty simply. We went with a broker who did us a deal with ING. That's pretty traditional P&I mortgage with an offset account. We have quite a large pot of savings in an offset account. You know, people talk about how much should you have in your emergency fund. I'm always many times that because I'm self-employed. I just never know what's going to happen. So I like to have plenty of cash in there. We also like saving up for the car, saving up for holidays, saving up for the renovations. Those savings pots all sit in that offset account.
So you've just got the one offset account and then you kind of quarantine it with a spreadsheet or some other document.
Right. Yep. I'd love to find an app that helped me do that, but you know, a spreadsheet seemed to be just as good.
Yeah.
So, I also got little pots in there for paying my rates bill, paying my utilities, paying my insurances. So everything goes into little pots in there and I try to pay it off annually. So the annual expenses come out of there once a year. And yeah, the money until then sits in our offset and gets...
Yeah, perfect. And you're a, I guess, a money nerd compared to, you know, the regular people on the street who aren't listening to My Millennial Money and other things like that. What's Natasha like with her money nerd status?
Well, listen, I'm maybe a money nerd as far as some people go who don't listen to My Millennial Money, but I reckon within your community, within your Facebook group, you know, I'm trying to keep up. There's a lot of nerds in there that love to talk about it, but it's all good. Yeah. Natasha is probably not as engaged as I am, but we do have regular catch-ups. You know, we plan all of our major spending. Last week, we went out to the movies and we had a date night. And before we started that, she updated me on the plans for the renovation. We chose some kitchen cabinets and I'd give her an update on all of our investments and, you know, when we hope to retire and all that kind of stuff. So we're in it together. But she takes the lead on some stuff and I take the lead on others.
So you're in your 40s, yeah?
Yep.
Can you give me a number?
46.
46, so mid-40s. When is this, what's your view on this, like retiring early? Like, do you guys want to literally get to 55 and sell the business, tool down and sit on a beach? Or are you more of a lifestyle type of, you know, do your own thing on your own terms?
Yeah, so I really enjoy my work, but I'm not sure I would go to work if nobody was paying me for it. So if I didn't need the money, I might be able to do some projects that were for charitable causes, right? So today, that charity would need to pay me for consulting services. But in the future, it'd be great to say, hey, no, look, you just run a cause that I believe in. I'd love to come and spend a couple of weeks, a couple of months helping you sort out your business systems, and that's at no cost. That would be awesome. Yeah. And we have investment accounts, or retirement accounts, I should say, in the US and in the UK that we can't really access from Australia. So the plan is to retire to the US, run that pot down, go to the UK and run that pot down, then come back to Australia and live out a nice, you know, golden years here in Brisbane.
Wow, wow. Okay, you've given me lots of stuff to get my claws into. So have you got a target age where you do want to be financially free?
Another 10 years at this would be good. Yep. It'll depend upon what the market does and how much we're able to save and, you know, what happens with the kids between now and then.
Yeah. And just on the kids, are we sending them to private high school or primary school?
They go to a local Catholic primary school. It's the one that Natasha went to when she was a little girl. The fees are very reasonable. I'm not a big fan of private schools, so we're desperately trying to avoid private schools for high school. Having said that, the suburb in which we live in Brisbane has the worst performing high school, the state high school in Queensland. So
suburb.
Yeah. Didn't know that when we moved here, but so we've got to find out what we're going to do there. So that's the kind of sticking point in our family at the moment is what the heck do we do about high school?
Well, I guess, you know, they've got 3 or 4 years to clean up that school anyway, so it could change. Who knows?
Yep. They've just opened up a new school We're just outside the catchment area for that, but maybe we can get in there. They're taking on scholarships and all sorts.
Yeah.
Or we can find some other options. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So move to the US to retire, quote unquote, to deplete that money. So is that like, is it a 401k that you've got over there?
Yeah, there's a 401k and then a Roth 401k. So a bit of both. Okay. One is you pay taxes and then you invest and you get the money tax-free at the other end, which is a bit like super. And then the other one is tax-free money on the way in, but you get taxed on your income when you draw it out.
Yeah, which is the Roth, I believe.
That's right.
How much money are we talking that's sitting over there at the moment?
There's a couple of $100,000, probably four or five. If you convert it into Australian, it's probably $400,000 or $500,000. Yeah. So another 10 years, it might be $1 million.
You bloody IT people do quite well, don't you?
That was, we had one kid at that point and we were saving super aggressively. So we put a lot of money into retirement when we lived in the US.
But just on that, like looking back, so you're 46 now, you're basically my age when you had your first child-ish, right?
Yep.
So I guess, you know, in my situation, if I turn around and I'm 46 year old, it wouldn't be that absurd for me to say, oh, I've got a 500 grand account over there, like because I've delayed the kid thing.
Right.
And all I've focused on was working and saving and whatnot. So, you know, I'd imagine when the kid thing happens, the savings did decrease somewhat.
Yep.
Or the savings rate. So it's just horses for courses. Like those who have had kids straight out of the bat or out of the gate or whatever, off the bat, you know, their savings and investing will probably start when the kids are in high school or finish school. So it's just whatever works, right?
I have to admire the people who are in their 20s and 30s trying to become financially independent, retire early, and they don't have any kids yet. They're like, oh, we're almost there. You know, $1 million is our number, and then we're going to retire, which is great. And then they're going to plan to have kids. And I just, they have no idea how expensive life is going to get when you have to upgrade your car and your house and your insurances and buy them clothes and food and they wreck everything. Yeah, it gets super expensive really quickly.
Yeah, how funny. So with the, like, have you talked to somebody with options about getting the money down from the US?
I have, yeah. So I had, I spoke to one of the people I think was on your show from...
James from Atlas Wealth.
From Atlas Wealth. He was amazing, so...
Oh, he's so... Can you now see why I just send people with anything international to Atlas Wealth?
Yep. So very helpful. That was a free initial consultation. So thank you, James. I really appreciate the, whatever it is, half an hour you spent with me, 45 minutes. His advice was you could bring the money into Australia, but because you've left it, you've got 6 months whenever you become an Australian tax resident, 6 months to bring it in. Otherwise, you've got to pay tax on it. So you've stuffed yourself. Basically, just leave it over there. It's in a recognized retirement account. The ATO won't tax you on it, but if you try to bring it into Australia, they will. So
Interesting. I mean, and it just goes to show that, like, we can only control what we can control. So all you can do is focus on building wealth in your life in Australia at age 55. If the ducks line up and you go over there, sweet.
Yeah.
If not, you may have to pay some tax on it as you bring it down. Like, what do you do? Like, you can't be held ransom by this amazing option, can you?
No, I'd be very happy to, if it came to it, to pay taxes on that money as you brought it into Australia. We're Australian tax residents. Like I just said, I'm very honoured to become an Australian citizen. Pay my taxes, man. I have no problem doing any of that. Mm. And Australia has given us a good life so far, and I'm sure it will continue to do that, despite what the government's up to at the moment with their net zero policies and everything. Life's going to get better in Australia. So, really pleased to be here and pay my taxes and pay my fair share.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And what's it invested in? So the Roth over there and the 401k, is the 401k a company plan that you don't have much say or latitude on?
No, I got out of that. So I don't. I think that was initially pitched to me. It's like the company's got this 401k.
Sure.
But I pretty quickly transferred it out of that into something in my own name so I could control it. And that's with a brokerage firm called TD Ameritrade.
Oh, yeah.
And it's invested.
They're like one of the biggest anyway. That's like the bloody. Like
they've just been acquired by Charles Schwab. So they're not even bigger. So it's a pretty safe company. They have a little bit of a hard time when they find out I live in Australia. So I've had to take out a postal address in the US, pretend I live there. And it's just invested in pretty safe investments. I'm a big believer in big basket ETFs. However, I do have a couple of individual investments. One is Microsoft. That's done really well. So I bought shares in Microsoft the day that Steve Ballmer announced his resignation. He's the former CEO, and those have gone up 500% or something since Satya Nadella took over. And then I thought there was a period when Microsoft would acquire Adobe. So I bought some shares in Adobe. That hasn't happened, but the Adobe shares have outperformed Microsoft. So I'm pretty happy.
Yeah. You know what? I'm so bullish on Microsoft. Hey, like I just rate them so much.
They're really good quality leadership at the moment, great products. And I think at home, people don't rate them as much because they definitely have taken their eye off the consumer. You know, we tend to use Apple devices or Android devices at home. Microsoft's pulled right out of that market. So, but at business and big business loves it. It's, you know, like really rock solid products now, very scalable, great pricing, and yeah, plenty of skills.
But their Fiore or whatever however you pronounce it. How do you pronounce it? Let me just go.
Fiore?
I'm just going to do the definition. Maybe I'm getting it wrong. I have foray, a sudden attack or incursion into enemy territory. Yeah. So their foray in like the Surface laptop really changed the game. Like that hardware, it's rock solid. And I've got a MacBook Pro and I've got a Surface laptop. I'm a Microsoft dude anyway. Like I grew up using Microsoft. I'm more flexible or efficient using Microsoft crap like Windows. I've got the iPhone. But it's such a better device. Like the battery's better. The touchscreen's awesome. It's a legit laptop, right? So
yeah, I think there's people who would fight you to the death for saying things like that, Glenn. But
yeah,
I'm not.
Well, I rock the boat. I've sometimes like I'll put an Apple sticker on the Surface laptop and stuff like that. Just mess with people.
It could be worse. You could put a Windows sticker on your Apple MacBook Pro.
Yeah. Okay. So. US is kind of ticking along. The UK, is that just the UK pension scheme? What's the deal over there?
Yeah, so I've got a self-invested personal pension. And again, it's invested in some Vanguard ETFs. And I'm actually trying to simplify it because I probably had 7 or 8 different ETFs. I had like a top 50 in China. I had some property ETFs and things. I'm just trying to simplify it and get down to one ETF. Mm. Oh, can I ask a question? In the UK, there's a style of managed fund called an accumulation fund, where instead of paying dividends, they take all that money and they just grow the value of the unit. So there's no payout, which is great if you want to delay taxes until later. In Australia, there doesn't seem to be an equivalent. Like every ETF will pay out some kind of distribution.
I think it's just the product design off the top of my head.
Right.
So basically... Let's just do some live Googling, shall we? Accumulation investment UK. So what I think it is, here we go, income or accumulation units. So this is the Barclays website. Once you've selected to invest with us, you're likely to buy, you have the most, you'll learn. I actually think, Neil, it's a product design. So what they've done is, they just literally reinvest the internal dividends and distributions and not spit it out.
That's all they do. And that's different from dividend reinvestment plans here, which do generate the money and then they buy the units for you.
Yeah, so a couple of things. And again, this is I'm well off the beaten track here. I'm just, you know, after a 2-second look and what you've said, and I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, someone correct us in the Facebook group. I would understand... There could be some year-on-year tax things, so they literally have produced the income, or, which is, and I think it's more the or, maybe they've got some tax ruling where they will get you on the way out or something like that.
Yeah. Yep.
That makes sense. I don't think there's, I think it is more of a product design. So yeah, anyway, it's interesting. So the self-invested pension in the UK... Not, I mean, I've only dealt with a lot of older clients in their 60s with UK pension schemes. I don't know. I know the same rules apply, bringing it down. You know, you've just got to tax it here locally.
Yep, that's right.
You can't, well, it's almost, you wouldn't bother anymore rolling it down into super here. That just got too hard.
Yeah, it got too hard. You had to set up a self-managed superannuation fund here and then pay lots and lots of fees and percentages to people. And I still get quite a few calls from people in tax havens and things, saying, oh, we've got this program where you can roll your money into a fund in the Cayman Islands or something. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. So first of all, don't want to end up in the Panama Papers or anything. That's definitely not me.
That's right.
Plus, anybody who's cold calling me stands to make a lot of money. That's just by definition.
Yeah. 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 And what would you say the value of that is in the UK?
That's probably something similar. I earned less when I lived in the UK. I was a bit younger, but I was there for a lot longer. So it's probably similar to that.
Yeah, cool, cool. So you basically, you're doing okay. You're, or very well in some to some people's standards. So that's awesome. And you've worked hard and you know, made the right decisions with your career and family life and all that. So what are you doing for money in Australia in terms of what are you doing to invest money in Australia? If there's any left.
We've tried a little bit of everything. So I was really interested to hear some of the interviews you had talking about a product called Gen Life. Investment bonds.
Yes.
So we have an AMP investment bond with about 20,000 in it. We have a Gen Life investment bond with around 8,000. And I'm just not convinced. I think those are great products for people in certain scenarios.
Yeah.
Like in your scenario, you were talking about wanting to set it up and give it to people in your family.
Yeah.
So it's an estate planning product in your mind. For other people, it can be a tax advantaged product. In our case, I just don't think we weighed up all the pros and cons enough before we went in. So we've got that money in there. We're not going to touch it. We're not going to grow it. So we'll benefit from that in, you know, whenever the 10 years is up, and we'll take that out.
Well, that Gen Life one, you could literally just earmark that for the kids or something.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll sit there and take over. It's growing pretty well. And I need to give them a call and find out if I've got it invested in the right underlying products that suit my style. And then Natasha and I both have a superannuation fund just with with Host Plus and their Choice Plus product.
Yep.
So you can invest in some companies and ETFs. We just invested in like 4 or 5 ETFs with the 80% that you're allowed to invest.
Yeah.
Split that up. So that's been trucking along quite nicely as well. The brokerage fees are pretty high, but we only invest in the Choice Plus part once a year. So
it's pretty right. So how does that work? Like, does it accumulate just in the, you know, their default balanced fund with the 20%, or do you just accumulate it in cash and then execute once a year?
So the 80% you can invest yourself. The 20% you have to choose one of their investment options, but you can choose any of them. You can choose the cash one. We've got it in shares, international shares. So it's still our preferred style. We're all into equities. And so we've got 20% in their international shares, bundled kind of investment option. And then the other 80% is split across 4 or 5 ETFs.
So do you cap out your super each year, both of you?
Try to, yeah. So we take a look in May and see, you know, have we got to the 25? Now it's $27,500.
Yep.
And then, we'll try and either make a personal contribution or get the business to make a contribution up to the limit.
Yeah, cool. And is there any other investing that you do in your life?
We have recently set up a family trust.
Yeah.
So this was for the new business. You'll love this. So I like to keep my life pretty simple. The investment bonds and things, a little bit more complicated, so there's a little bit of complexity there. The new business that we set up, we've got 6 co-investors, co-founders. So there's a unit trust.
Yep.
There's a
The family trust owns your units.
That's right. There's a family trust owns each of the units. Then each of the family trusts has a beneficiary that's a bucket company. And the bucket company is owned by another family trust.
You're right.
And so the accountant or the business advisor who set it all up for us, set up 14 or 15 trusts, 5 or 6 companies. It got very crazy very quickly.
They did all right out of you?
The fees were pretty reasonable. I think a couple of grand to set all that up is pretty reasonable. And the big benefit for us is that there's some intellectual property rights and tax advantages. So if we're going to grow a software company and begin to sell software licenses, then this is the best business structure for doing that. So, and I'm not afraid to pay for good advice and take it up.
So. Yeah, same. So like for me, my family trust actually owns all the My Millennial Money names, the IPs, the trademarks, and Somo Interactive, our operating company, which I also own, pays a licensing fee over to the family trust. So same thing, like it just, and for example, I'm just thinking, is this stuff I should say or can say publicly? But whatever, we're here now. My book royalties go into my family trust, not into the operating company.
Right.
So just so if one day, you know, someone walked along and said, here, Glenn, have a shat load of money. Can we have my millennial money? It just gives me the latitude to keep the book and my other stuff separate.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've got no intention of doing anything because I love what I do. So it's just, it goes back to that good planning and good advice, because if you get that right, you just get more options down the track if situations present themselves, right?
Yep, and that's exactly what we wanted, is just to keep things flexible, some asset protection in there as well. So got a couple of businesses. I don't think IT is a very risky industry, but it's a chance I could mess up somebody's project and get sued and want to have my assets protected. So yeah, we need to structure correctly and take out the right insurance and things as well.
Well, and the good thing now is, now that you've got the family trust there, that's now your wealth creation vehicle for the rest of your life. So like my family trust, I've got a self-worth account that's owned by the family trust. So I guess you'd probably almost be running out of money if you're starting a business and got kids and capping out your super. Like, are you anything else on the horizon in terms of investing?
The one thing we're going to do, hoping to get a decision any day now, actually, through the family trust, is start the equity builder product from NAB. So that's where you can borrow some money from NAB and invest it in shares. I'm not a property guy. I'm never going to buy an investment property. So I wanted a way of accelerating my share portfolio, and this seems like a good way of doing it. I think most people who take out the NAB equity builder or any kind of margin loan probably do it under their own names, and I'm doing it under the family trust. So that's taking them a little while to work through that.
What's the reason?
Why we're doing it inside the family trust? Just because we want that growth to be inside a vehicle where we can, in later years, all our kids are beneficiaries of that family trust as well, and we can share out the money and share out the income from it.
Yeah.
So just an estate planning thing.
So why, and again, I don't know your situation. See, I considered the NAB Equity Builder, right? What are the rates like? They're a bit higher than the run-of-the-mill rates, right?
Right. So if I was to remortgage our house, we could probably get a better rate. So the classic debt recycling idea is to release some equity from your home loan, take out another mortgage, which is then what you use to go and buy some shares. I don't think we can do that. We're kind of stuck with ING. When I started the mortgage with them, I was working for a big four advisory consulting firm. You know, nice job, very safe. When I quit that job 3 years ago to go out on my own again, the bank didn't like that at all. So they consider us to be self-employed, even though we're PAYG employees of a company. We own the company, so they consider us to be self-employed. And trying to remortgage, trying to get a good rate. You know, you see a headline rate advertised. That's not always available for self-employed people. And especially with a company, it's reasonably young. It's only got 2 years of accounts available. It's pretty hard to do that kind of debt recycling strategy, or even to remortgage our home to do the renovations. So NAB.
I think talk to your mortgage broker, because I know for a fact, only because I'm literally doing it at the moment, ANZ will look at 1 year of financials for self-employed, and you might have some joy with CBA as well. But it comes back to, like, you're going to need, I would presume, when you refi to do the renovations. I don't know if you're just putting in a new sink in a bathroom and need $5,000, or you're going, give me $200,000, we're doing this, baby. Like,
It's the latter. We're going $250,000 probably.
Yeah, so you're going to need some meat for the renovation anyway. And that's what I mean. Like, if you were going to, how much do you reckon you'll try and do through the NAB Equity Builder?
We've got about $20,000 as our kind of stake, our down payment.
Yeah.
So it's a bit like buying a property, right? You have to have a deposit, and then they can lend you some more money. So we're hoping to have
20. So what would that be, get about $80,000 off that or something?
That's right. So yeah, $100 all up. So 20 will be our own shares. So we've got DZZF? It's the beta shares, the diversified beta shares. Ethical. So we've got some of those and a little bit of AFIC. And we'll put that together. That's inside the trust already. So we'll transfer that over to NAB. They'll lend us about another 80, as long as it's invested in pretty safe, again, you know, those kind of diversified ETFs.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you know, I don't ever say time the market, but like, will you just have that $80,000 of theirs in the wings ready to pull the trigger? So if there is a bit of a rocky road, go in or?
No, I'm a kind of, as soon as it's there, I invest it. Try not to time the market. Sometimes I'll be lucky. And, you know, I was in the midst of the coronavirus dip in the market when it dipped 20 and 30%. I was like, where can I find some more money to invest? So I tipped out our savings. So I took all the money we've been saving up for a new car for the last 10 years. That all went into the market. So just take advantage of
it. And that's it. Like I honestly, month on month, week on week, I don't time the market. I just do a monthly amount in investing in super and into my investment bond. But the self-wealth account that I've got, it sits cash heavy. Just so, you know, if there is an event, well, I just tip some money in. It's weird. Like I don't systematically time the market because you can't win, right? But I just I guess what I'm getting at is I don't like to be in a position where if an opportunity presents itself that I've got nothing to take advantage of that opportunity.
Right.
And that could be I participated in an IPO the other day. I got an email and hey, we're doing this IPO. I had some cash there. So the shoe fit, right?
Right.
But if I didn't have any cash available, well, I couldn't take advantage of that opportunity. So
yeah, I'll do that even in a small way. So we invest every few months. Once we've got about $5,000, so we'll invest in whatever's next. It's normally a rebalancing thing. So we just buy whichever ETF is slightly underweight. But if the market dips by 2% one day, I'm like, well, I'm not due to invest until next month. Right? I've only got $4,000. I'll just go today. May as well. 2%, that's just a little bit of a discount. Absolutely. I'm going to go early.
I guess there's just those checks and balances. Like you just kind of get to the point where you start trading and, oh, it's high, so I'll sell and then I'll wait. So, I think we both agree that we both buy and hold for the long term and systematically invest. But if there is an opportunity there, we want some powder in the keg to take advantage of.
So can I ask another advice question from you? This is
Sure, but we're going to take a break first and then we'll come back and you can ask me a question right after this.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Okay, we're back. We're speaking with Neil. He's from Brisbane. He's mad. He's a mad dog. And before we get onto your question, Neil, I want to thank everyone for purchasing my book, Sort Your Money Out and Get Invested. Have you purchased that yet, Neil?
I've got two copies. It's one on my desk.
Two copies? Where did you bloody get two copies from?
So there's one.
Oh, wow.
And then, that's a friend of yours.
Victoria's. Yep. She's on the money. We've just edited out something, guys, that Neil said he bought my book for somebody else. Have you had a bit of a flick through it?
I have. I've started it. So I've read the first, probably 10 pages. I love reading it because I can hear your voice when I'm reading it.
Yeah.
And I know there's a few people in the Facebook group have posted up some of the slang that you've got. Sangle as a prangle. It caught a few people out. They didn't know that was a typo. But yeah, love hearing your voice.
It wasn't a typo.
Yeah, no, I know. But
Cool.
I can't wait for the Audible version to come out as well so I can just listen to it. I love listening to books. I'm much better in fact, if I really want to really read a book and take it all in, I do both at the same time. So I'll read it and play the Audible version in my ears at the same time.
Don't do that for me because the audio one, I told the people, because I'll just be reading it. And I said, if it's not word for word and it makes sense on a human level, leave it in there. But actually, I'll tell you something funny. And we were going to play a testimony of somebody who'd bought the book, but we might not because I can't be bothered finding it for Nate to insert. But Neil, you've been impressed so far with the first 10 pages.
Yes. I'd recommend everybody go out right now and buy the first 10 pages.
Exactly. So how wild is this? So we're recording this audiobook and I was originally contracted for 60,000 words, right, for this book. So they've booked the book in, they've booked the audio book in, and I got to 70,000 words and I called Wiley. I'm like, I need to, I'm not even nowhere near finished. This book is not going to be, it's not going to be 60,000. So kept going. And so then when it got time to read the audio book, I made the call after speaking to everyone in the My Millennial Money community that I would read the audiobook. And they wanted me to audition, not Wiley, the other audiobook people, and they were a bit hesitant to have me read it. So anyway, what was supposed to take 5 business days to do took about 12 because one, the book is double the size of what they thought, and two, I can't read that great, and three, it's just an excruciating process. Anyway, so I'm at the studio yesterday finishing up, and I wanted to make a difference. So the case studies in the book, I've got voiceover people, I've got Asher and Alex to do that. The coroner's report in the book, Dave, the voiceover, the other engineer in the studio, he did that for us. So it had a bit of fun. Anyway, one of the people in audiobook land, because it was getting to the point where they were really frustrated at the time that it was taking, and they had to push out the delay, mainly because one, I'm useless, and two, we couldn't get back in to finish it because we had to wait till the studio was free. Anyway, so we were going into calling, because you know at the start of audiobooks, and apologies if you want us to get back to money, but we will. At the start of audiobooks, they go, "You're listening to an audible title, read by Glenn James, read by Glenn James." Like, I'm just like, I'm not saying that. That's ridiculous. It sounds weird. And I said, I want to say written and read by me, Glenn James. Like, just so it's, you know.
Oh, human?
Oh, no. Oh, no, we can't do that. We can't do that. And I'm like, no, it's my bloody book. I'm doing that. Anyway, so someone called somebody who made the decision on it, and we were going to ask this person, and he had it on speakerphone. He said, "Oh, hi, how are you?" And this person goes, "Oh." Anyway, on speakerphone, having the biggest whinge about me and didn't know. And Dave and I just looked, oh, I shouldn't say his name, but whatever. Dave and I just looked at each other like, oh, awkward.
That's good.
And I'm just going, I'm egging him on like, yeah, keep it going. Let's see what she said. Anyway, so bit of a like annoyance. And it was just so funny that they were having a whinge because I was slow and useless and all that. But it's just like, hey. It's my book. My audience wanted to hear my voice. Yeah. And if we weren't doing this, you wouldn't have a job for this part of the project because, anyway.
So the sequel is going to be self-published, is that right? Is that the announcement you're about to drop?
Nah, I just think the sequel or the next book, if I do one, I've actually started writing it, but I don't know if I'll do the audiobook. I don't know. I probably will because just the investing stuff, it just took so long doing all the numbers and all that. Anyway, sorry, we're ranting everyone. All right, so what did you want to ask me? You wanted my advice. I can't give you my advice, but I can give you my opinion.
What would you do in a situation like mine? We're going to buy this new car. It's not due to arrive now for a long, long time, this big bus. Mm-hmm. It's about $60,000. We've got $60,000 in our offset that we've been saving up for 10 years. Rich. It's got an automatic tailgate. Imagine that. Automatic. I can't believe it.
Wow. rich much?
Do we spend our savings that we've been saving up for the car on the car? Do we get a car loan and make it hurt? You know, a couple of percent. Feel that depreciation burn? Or do we take the money out of our investments that we've got outside of the family trust and then use the savings to put inside the family trust?
Gosh.
It's a nice problem to have. I appreciate the privileged position that we're in, but
Oh man. So
you're a bit of a car nut. I don't know how you pay for your car. So
for me, I personally pay cash. So, bam, one transfer done. I do that for a number of reasons. One, I just don't want to have a car loan. Like, I just don't want to pay a $9.95 monthly fee. I don't want to have to fill out paperwork. I don't want to have to deal with that stuff. So I do cash. Secondly, it hurts me more to part with a lump sum than to go, oh, yeah, I can afford $500 a month. Like, that's easy. I'll just do that. And then you get into the looking and before you know it, oh, it's only $530 a month and you've gone up $20,000 or whatever that is, right? So for me, this, and what I'll do, we'll see Vince is available and I'll just patch him in.
Well, Vince Scully is the guy who would have me take out a car loan.
Vince would have you take out a car loan. So let's see if Vince is available. Maybe he's busy. It's fascinating podcasting.
Yeah, Nathan, this bit can hit the floor.
Ah, leave it. Stuff him. All right, he's not answering. But if he calls back. So Vince basically is the opposite. Because when you look at it, you are borrowing money as long as you've got a mortgage, right?
Right.
So $60,000 paying on a car, you're borrowing against the mortgage anyway because you're not living in it. Now, it's, yeah, I,
that's true. That's a good
I don't know. About it. So the question is, do you, in your situation, this one I probably would entertain in your situation. I've resolved I'm not doing it for me because I need to feel the big lump of cash leave, which in turn makes me spend less. What you could do is, when are you doing the renovations?
Starting probably in January.
Could you, how do you have like enough meat in your house to borrow 300?
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you go to the bank or whoever, whether it's ING or whoever will give you the money, refi the house, carve off a separate 50 grand loan or whatever, 60 grand loan for the car, and then at least you can just pump that over time separately. I don't know.
Yeah, I just $50,000 over whatever we've got left on our mortgage, 25 years, even though the interest rate's pretty low, we'd have to really go at that to make it worthwhile.
You just have to make sure you punch it within 4 years.
Yeah.
Like whatever way you cut it, you're borrowing money.
Right. Borrowing money from my future self if I just take today's savings, yeah.
Yeah. Like would you look at, I know it's actually funny at this time with COVID, I was going to say, would you look at a two-year-old car, but it's probably just as
more expensive
to buy a new one. Yep. Yeah, that's right. Yep. That's right, because of the stock. So, yep. Yeah, man, I don't know. What's your gut feeling say? Just write it.
Just write the check.
And be done with it.
Yeah, keep it simple. Yeah. I've had leases and things in the past, and life was never simpler when it was like that. So,
what's your car that you use?
We have a 2011 Hyundai iX35. Cost us about 14 grand. 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Yeah. So you've only got one car?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
I used to have a scooter, a 250cc Honda scooter. I would ride around to clients on that, but since COVID, it just sat in the driveway, so I sold that for scrap.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, I think you really got to just, I don't know. It's one of those things like Vince all day long will say, get a car loan, quarantine it, make the depreciation hurt and do it over 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, I don't know.
All right. I like the idea of the mortgage thing. I need to get back to our broker and see what we can do there because, I need...
I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, one, it's a double decision. Like, if you're going to buy the car with cash, we'll go and do that. I'm not selling down investments and shuffling money. Like, that's getting ridiculous. Buy the car, move it. But... if you're like, well, I'd rather cash flow it over 4 years with the car loan or the mortgage. Well, we're in the loan territory anyway. I'd rather set up the paperwork and have a split on the mortgage at 3% than a car loan at 5%.
Right.
Like that's kind of how I would look at it. Yeah. But that's a trap for me because then I'll get cute and want to spend more.
Oh, and the tinted windows and the spoiler and the 20-inch wheels. Yeah.
Yeah.
None of those are an option on a Kia Carnival.
No, that's right. So anyway, Vince isn't answering, so that sucks. Well, anything else you want to add? Is there anything that you want to talk about that we did not
cover? I thought an interesting one, because you quite often ask people what kind of charities they support.
Yeah.
So I made a note. Yeah. I made a note of some of those because.
Oh, that's right. Rachel sent you the pre-question. Sorry.
Yeah.
She's so good, isn't
she? Yeah. Not that you've used any of those, by the way.
No, I do. Okay. So, I kid you not. Those questions that you've got sent when we do these My Millennial Story episodes, or my Gen X story episodes for this one, we actually have them there. So I've got a framework and a base camp to go back to, because if I get someone that I can't click with, or you've got to really force the conversation, I can just, I've just got them to go back to. Like, there's always different questions. But there is a question there, like, what charity do you support, or what, you know, so what, yeah, what's your giving situation like?
I do it mostly through my company. So yeah, one of my businesses is a member of an organization called 1% for the Planet, which is a charitable organization that supports environmental causes. And what you have to do with 1% for the Planet to be a member is donate 1% of all your revenues to an environmental cause. And you have to, you pay a couple hundred bucks to this organization, and then you donate whatever you want. And they validate, they check your accounts at the end of every year to make sure you've donated 1% of your sales. So Patagonia, Honest Tea, and then a couple of Australian companies like Keep Cup, if you ever use one of those plastic cups to get your coffee.
Yep.
And one of my favorites, Four Pines Brewing. They are all members of 1% for the Planet. And I use 1% of my business's revenue to donate to the Foundation for National Parks and Wildlife. So we're supporting the regeneration of bushland and the national parks and help with bushfire recovery. And then Natasha and I have got a couple of personal charities that we support occasionally. It tends to be towards the end of the year. So we'll take a look and go, oh yeah, okay, we've got some cash left over. Let's top up our super. And if there's any money left over, we've got the Prince Charles Hospital Foundation here in Brisbane, who looked after Natasha's little brother before he passed. And then Micah Projects, who look after homeless folks around Brisbane. And a favorite of mine is the Smith family, who look after disadvantaged families, particularly kids in Australia as well. So, yeah.
Because I think it's important to note, to always encourage people, it's not really so much about the charity or the cause. It's about not being attached to your own money to the point where you can't be generous, right?
Yep.
So would you say you're a bit of a greenie, like, given that you've made that comment about the net zero and all that before, like, it's topical right now, and that you do the planet stuff. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. So you would say you're more of that tilt, obviously.
Sure.
Because your money speaks louder than words a lot of the time.
Yeah, I would. We had a great time. When we left California, we took 6 weeks and drove across the US to New York and visited as many national parks there as we could. We used to love visiting national parks and the mountains and stuff in the UK. And even here in Australia, we really enjoy the outdoors and everything that Queensland has to offer. We're going to Tasmania. We're going to do some mountain climbing down there in January. And I love it. I love getting out and seeing our planet. And I work in IT. And I read recently that IT contributes 4% of the world's greenhouse gases. The internet usage does anyway. So it's as much as airlines. So I think the industry that I work in has some way to go. And, you know, if I can play my own little part there, then that's cool.
On that, I've just started a book called Soil. Can you see that?
Yeah.
It's an audio book. That's the cover of it. It's a bit not in focus. It's called Soil, The Incredible Story of What Keeps the Earth and Us Healthy by Matthew Evans. And it's fascinating. They basically, he said, one teaspoon of soil, there's more microbes or little thingies in that teaspoon than there are people on the planet.
Wow.
Yeah. I find it quite cathartic, and I've heard anecdotally that doing gardening is actually really good for your mental health, getting your hands in the dirt, in the earth. Because I'll sometimes...
What would you know? You're a millennial.
Yeah, that's right. I know nothing.
By gardening?
Yeah, that's right. Whoa. So if I've got to make a phone call, sometimes I'll go out in the back lawn and just weed while I'm on the phone.
Yeah.
So on that, like, when you do the renos to the house, are you allocating, you know, 15 grand for solar and batteries and all that?
The house had solar when we bought it. I don't know how long ago that was, probably 10 years. So I don't know. Do you need to replace solar after a while? I guess the inverter.
I think they reckon the panels last 20 years.
Yeah. So
All you'd have to do is get someone to throw a meter on it and see if it's
Yeah, I'm going to get them cleaned for sure.
Yeah,
and we were really lucky. We had a feed-in tariff that was pretty good at one stage, and it actually paid for our gas bill. So there was enough money left over from the electricity. So we got a gas water heater, gas for cooking, and it covered that as well. So a free energy. So
what I'm considering doing is getting, and actually I'm going to do that right now. I'm just going to make a note. I'm going to text the neighbors, because we're in strata here, to see if they care if I put solar panels on my part of the roof. But I'm also going to get a battery. And then, yeah, you're making a weird face. So the battery, the trade-off in terms of costs, it's not there yet. But I want it just to have a big surge protector on my house because, you know, I've got all this studio gear as well.
Right.
And then if there is a blackout or, you know, we get the summer storms come through, at least if I'm recording or whatever, everything will stay on and I can, you know, wrap up and power down stuff or whatever. So that's what I'm going to look at doing.
Yeah, there's a lot of good things about them. You know, we have a tendency to put the laundry on, for example, at nighttime. It's like, no. Got to put it on during the day. It's an old habit from when I grew up as a kid. There was a different rate for electricity at nighttime, much cheaper.
Yeah, so, off-peak, yeah.
Yeah, off-peak. So you'd put your dishwasher on, you put your washing machine on at nighttime. In Australia, if you've got solar on the roof, you shouldn't be doing that. You should be putting it on during the day. Old habits are hard to get out of sometimes. So yeah, but battery would obviously give you the flexibility to do either. I think if I was going to buy an electric car, for sure I would have a battery at home. It's a good investment.
On the car thing, like I was actually looking at Tesla the other night, and for the Model 3, it's like $150,000. Like
that's the budget one. That's right.
I think S is the. Hang on, let's have a look.
Model 3 is the budget one. S is the original.
Oh, sorry, coupe. Model S Tesla. Shopping. See if I can buy one of these. Oh, you've got me. I'm just going to go to car sales. Tesla Model 3. Let's have a look. Yeah, so the Model 3. Oh, yeah, I can get a 2020 for $65,000. So it might be the Model S.
Right.
That's, yeah, the Model S is the more expensive one. So 2019 model for $115,000, 2015 for $70,000. See, I'm just not, I just can't bring myself to, yeah, here we go. 2019 Tesla Model S, $150,000.
Yowza.
Like, I can't bring myself to spending that much on a freaking car. So, but yeah, I'm thinking like, I was looking at Tesla and then I was like, I honestly think I'll just wait until, you know, Mazda now have a electric thing. So once it's more mainstream, right, the price is just going to come down.
So I'm about to pay a lot of money for a diesel minibus and I'm wondering if that's going to be the last, it's certainly probably going to be the last internal combustion engine car I'll ever own, we'll ever own. But yeah, will I be one of the last people driving it as well? You know, we plan to drive this thing for 10 years until the kids grow up and leave home. And what's the situation going to be? Who am I going to sell it to? Is there anybody going to want to buy a diesel family vehicle at that stage? They're all going to be electric, I think. So, yeah, interesting times.
The fun bus, yeah. Well, it's been good to have a chat. And thank you, everyone, if you're still hanging around. I just like chatting to different listeners of the show and hopefully you can learn, be encouraged, be entertained, whatever. And thank you, Neil, for lending us your time. Actually, I just got an email from Rach. Well, I got it over an hour ago. Here's Neil's details. A couple of facts about me. Met Glenn and John at the M3 live show in Brisbane. Yep, we've covered that. 46-year-old, a millennial wannabe. Yep, we've covered that. Married with 3 kids, lives in Brisbane. We've covered that. Lived in the UK and US, so we have investments all over the place. Yep. Run my own IT business. Yep. Made heaps of investing mistakes. Okay, what? And then happy to talk about anything relation to our finances. What was some of the investment mistakes that you made?
So this was through an independent financial advisor in the UK. He was rubbish. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So he got me into all sorts of expensive, complicated things. And partly because, especially, I'm pretty risk tolerant now, but I was even more so when I was early 20s. I wanted to invest in some alternative assets. One of them that he got me into was a forestry investment really just went to zero. That was complete write-off, got nothing out of that one. The other one was even worse. So it's through like a wrap platform in the UK, and it was an investment in life insurance products. So if you were terminally ill with cancer, but you had a life insurance policy and you wanted to sell it early so you could use the cash to have a nice last year, whatever, of your life, then this company would pay you whatever it is, 80% of the value of the policy, buy it from you and continue to pay the premiums on your behalf until you pop your clogs, and then they would get the payout. That was ethically I'm not even sure I would go there again, but not only has it gone to zero, but I can't get off the Wrap platform because I can't sell it. It's completely liquid.
Oh, it's a liquid.
Sorts of bankruptcy proceedings that's dragged on for 10 years. So I have to pay a Wrap platform fee every year, and I have to pay more because I don't live in the UK anymore. So I'm now underwater. I've lost all my investment. Plus, these guys reckon I still owe them £2,000 or £3,000 because they've been managing this illiquid bankrupt investment for 10 years. So
those products, they're not actually needed in Australia, because in Australia, most death policies have at least an 18-month terminal illness benefit.
Right.
So if you certify that you're going to die within 2 years or 18 months, they'll just write the check anyway and give you the money. And if you survive, well, that sucks for them. I mean, it's good for you. But yeah, I had heard of stuff like that out of the UK.
Yeah, some crazy things. So yeah, that was a painful lesson. So now that's why I just stick to nice, simple ETFs. Like I said, I've got two single company investments, but yeah, I try and keep
it simple. What are the two? You got Microsoft and what was the other one?
Adobe.
Oh, Adobe, that's right, yeah.
They're doing really well. Oh, the other one is actually Berkshire Hathaway. I bought a bit of Warren Buffett's, whatever it is, the Class B one, the cheapo one. And it's pretty mediocre, the returns on that in the last 5 or 6 years. I know Warren's lost it, but he sold all his airline investments in the middle of COVID, lost a heap of money there. IBM was a stinker for him.
Yeah. But it just goes to show, like, again, can't beat the market.
It's tough.
On balance.
Well, he's got a pretty good track record for the preceding 40 years, right? So.
Oh, absolutely. But still, in terms of you investing, you can't beat the market.
Nope. And you don't need to, right? No. I'm pretty happy if I can get market returns the rest of my life. I'll be a happy, happy person.
Yeah, totally. All right, Neil, and give your podcast a shout out.
If anybody,
for the three people left listening.
If anybody's into building amazing applications, that's the name of my podcast. You'll find me everywhere good podcasts are sold.
And you can look out for Neil's little Lego man. And why is the little Lego man your logo?
So everybody who completes my online training course gets so this is a little Lego figure with my company logo on the shirt. And Auspost used to send these to anybody who completed my course for $3.50. And then they've changed the postage rate. It's now $27.50.
Jeez.
So I don't send these out anymore. But
amazing.
So lots of, you can see all my Lego logos in the background. It's all tax write off. The company buys all of that. The kids build it.
All right, Neil, and thank you everyone for listening today. Thanks, Neil, for hanging out. It's been great just to chew the fat and have a chat.
Been great fun. Thanks, Len. Thanks for all you do. Appreciate it.
Bye.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
My Millennial Money supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you would like some other giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.